Welcome to the Nasty Cast.
And I never would have probably tried Spam if it weren't for my dad.
I do a lot of Zumba.
Look at the meaty thighs on this Italian player.
Well, last I heard, he had some Velcro gloves and he was hanging out with some sheep in Montana.
I was freaking brothers every way like MJ.
Zardoz.
How dare you, Luis Valbuena's a national treasure.
I'm a pepper jack guy.
Well, I most definitely have a throbbing Corey Kluboner.
So you're delicious and sticky.
Okay, so I don't know if you guys heard this, but I read this story today and I was kind of brushing up on it a little bit before the show. And near Youngstown, Ohio, and I don't know the geography of Ohio, because I guess I'm kind of like Ohio, the way people are with Florida. I think everything's just really close. It's really
Where's
not.
Bob Lung when you need him?
Buckeye. Yeah, right. Yeah, I'm hoping he's okay. I got a tweet from he was tweeting out some stuff a little bit ago, so I guess he has not been victimized or succumbed to one of these zombie-like raccoons. But I saw this headline. When you see a headline that says zombie raccoons are terrifying Ohio residents, you're going to click on that and you're going to read it. And so in this Ohio city, this guy reported – the authorities are saying that they have responded to over a dozen calls about odd acting raccoons that people are saying are like zombie raccoons. And so the one guy that they interviewed here, which I wish I could find actual tape of this interview because I'd like to hear it.
I want to see a video of the zombie raccoon. What makes it a zombie?
Well, that's okay. See, that's what I'm trying to figure out because, okay, here is verbatim what this guy said that the raccoon was doing. Okay.
Make sure you do it in the Ohio accent.
Is there an Ohio accent? Like,
there I'd rather is when you say it.
I think it'd sound good like in a North Dakota accent. But
I think that's what it is. I think it's like a quarter of a North Dakota accent is what.
Right. He the raccoon there. He would come and stand on his hind legs, and I'd never seen raccoons do that before. And he would show his teeth, and then he would fall backward and almost go into a comatose condition there, and. That's it. Like, that's what makes them zombies. Like,
it's not a zombie.
Now, Marv,
that's what I'm saying. I don't know if there's, like, something else that's, like, because all people keep saying is they're behaving unusually. Well, raccoons are, like, if you ever corner a raccoon, they can go from cute to, like, Satan in about a half a second. And so I don't know really. Maybe just he's like it said he fell backward and was like in a comatose condition. Maybe I don't know. So it
sounds like
anyway.
He's just lit. Like he's just got super stoned and then was like, oh, man. And it just fell over like some raccoon got into somebody's stash is what happened. That's what it sounds like to me.
Or maybe they got in like a field, like a field where people were growing something. I don't know. So
well, I've heard stories. I think it was squirrels where they got into some fermented apples or something like that, and they were eating them and getting just hammed. So maybe it's something like that.
That sounds like a good weekend to me. Eating a fermented apple and just getting stoned, just blasted out of my mind.
That's dangerous business if you're a squirrel though, because you're up in the tree most of the time. You could fall out and die.
It'd be a better story if it was people acting like zombie raccoons because they got into some stuff.
Like bath salts.
They paint themselves like striped.
Yeah, that'd be a little better. So anyway, I'm going to have to do some more research on this to see exactly what these zombie raccoons are doing.
Here's a question for you. Philosophically, do people have raccoon hands or do raccoons have people hands?
Well, it's cutting deep here.
Yeah, it's like which came first, the chicken or the egg.
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, do they have the what appears the four fingers? Do they have the opposable thumb?
Yeah, they have the thumb. They have hands like us.
Yeah.
Much furrier though,
right?
For the most part,
it's debatable. You haven't seen my hands before.
Do you have claws? Like they have a bit like bigger like claws though.
They're also fat. Like raccoons have gotten so fat over the last several years because people are just like, oh, here, have some garbage, and
they'll eat
a lot
anything.
Of garbage. Yeah. They're like a goat of mammals. Wait, goats are mammals. I don't know. Whatever.
Well, speaking of garbage, it's episode 149 of the Nasty Cast.
Best segue ever.
Yes.
Welcome to the show, everybody. I'm Nathan Dokken. You can find me on Twitter at Nathan Dokken. And joining me today is Van Lee. What's up, Van?
Hey, I was just cleaning my desk with my raccoon hands because there was something weird stuck to it. And now that it's clean, I actually feel a lot better about myself.
That's good. It is spring. It's time for spring cleaning. Ron Rigney, are you doing any spring cleaning this week?
I hope not. I hate cleaning stuff. It's the worst.
Yeah, my wife and I have a really good system where I clean nothing. Like, I do all the cooking, and she does all the cleaning, and it keeps everyone happy because she doesn't cook, and I hate cleaning.
Well, see, and you know as well, too, Nate, you're a married man, as I am as well, and Van is the smart one here and is not. Right. No matter what you're going to do, you're going to do it wrong anyway. So why, you know, you might as well skip the middleman and just not even do it. You know?
Yes, I know exactly of what you speak.
I'm sure a few listeners do as well.
Yes. What is your biggest problem with your wife? Tweet us at NastyCastPod. You can also reach Van at ManlyVanLee, and Ron is at TheRealMade. You can even email us about your gripes, NastyTraxPods@gmail.com. Trax is in fan tracks, T-R-A-X. If you like the show and you want to mention, I don't know, zombie raccoons, you can leave us a rate and review on the iTunes. And also, if you like the show, you can help us out in another way. You can go to patreon.com/nastypod and give us a buck or two a month. And somewhat of a big announcement in a season that has been full of them. We really have to take a moment and thank you all for your donations on Patreon. Thank you so much to everybody who's helped us out there. And that has allowed us to actually move to the Fantrax Podcast Network and off of Blog Talk Radio. Which, so now you won't get so many ads. Some of those cheesy, annoying ads that show up all the time.
It's always like, Napa know-how. John likes to build his own car, so he goes to Napa and buys oil filters all day.
There's a lot of flow in there, too.
Oh, yeah, she's in everything.
Yeah, I get mostly Napa, though. I think that's the one I get the most.
Napa know-how. I've heard that so many times.
Yeah.
Once in a while, you get a Spanish one in there. That's just like, what the hell?
Vaya con Dios.
Santa Maria. Like, what was that even for? But anyway, yeah, so you guys don't have to deal with that anymore, because we had been sort of living off of, you know, the small coin that we get in our pockets from all those ads. But with your help on Patreon, we can take those ads out and just use your donations. So thank you very much, and you all get to reap the benefits of that by not having to sit through commercials. So definitely kudos to you on that. Also, you can listen to Fantrax Dynasty Baseball. Today we are going to be doing with the Pirates top five prospects and the Royals top five prospects. So that will be fun. That is all Dynasty all the time over there on Fantrax Dynasty Baseball. But on today's show, we have a lot to talk about, so let's get to it. We've got news, injuries. We're going to try to find some stolen bases for you out there, talk about some of our week one our biggest takeaways, I guess, some guys that have potentially given us some cause for concern. We're going to look at some hot players that we're going to potentially be picking up off of the waiver wire. But let's start off with some news, and this one cuts me deep. Delino DeShields has already suffered a broken hamate and will miss 4 to 6 weeks. So, Van, I'll throw this to you first. Who are we replacing his steals with?
He broke his ham bone. That's a real shame anytime you break your ham bone. Long time he's going to be out, so it's sad. So I've got a couple of names for you. I have basically put them in descending order as far as percentage owned. And I actually took these off Fantrax, so I don't quite know how to put that in a context, because Fantrax generally does deeper leagues, so I think the ownership numbers are going to be a little bit higher. Anyway, you make the decision. Put Malik Smith down. That's Ron's guy. I'm sure he's on Ron's list somewhere. According to Fantrax, he's 46% owned. That seems a little high to me, but he's going to steal if he gets on base. Cameron Maben of the Marlins, 39% owned. Guess what? He was leading the American League in steals for a majority of the season until he got hurt. That's another guy that we know is just going to run, and he's going to get playing time in that crappy lineup. Although I will say my boy Lewis Brinson breaking camp. I'm pretty excited about that. Next up, Jerod Dyson with the Diamondbacks. He's playing a little more than he's going to because Steven Souza's hurt. But for right now, you're getting basically full-time at-bats. He's only 27% owned. And then finally, I went deep, and I got Adam Engel, who is 10% owned. So owned by nobody on Fantrax, which means he's owned by no one on the other, you know, less deep leagues. But he can run. So if he gets his at-bats, it's a pretty flawed player, but he'll get you some stolen bases.
Yeah, so you literally took every single guy. That
even
I had.
Adam Engel.
I didn't have Adam Engel, so I'll give you credit for that one. But yeah. I mean, and just kind of piggyback on what you were saying there, this was tough just for the simple fact that, and I'll kind of mention this later on, there's nobody stealing bases right now anyway. And so I think that's something that you kind of struggle with too. But, you know, it just kind of illustrates, you know, number one, when you're going through and we, you know, we're talking about all these different injuries, is that there's not a lot out there to replace these stats with that you're losing. And it seems like these guys are dropping like flies every day. But I will say, you know, one of the guys that I think might be the easiest to get would probably be Malik Smith, just because it seems like the Rays overall are not doing a whole heck of a lot. And, you know, he's obviously part of that. And, you know, one of the guys too, Kevin Kiermaier, that is a guy that I, you know, I have in a couple places as well, you know, not doing a whole lot either. And so the whole lineup is just kind of getting overlooked, I think. So yeah, Malik Smith's probably my favorite one on there, but I agree with what you said too. I was kind of interested to see the ownership percentage for those two guys, you know, the way they have them listed, you know, Dyson with 27 and 38% for Maben. It's got to be a little bit higher than that. That's the only thing with Dyson too that I can add into. He's probably going to sit against lefties, so you know he's going to be a guy that he's going to be part of a platoon anyway. So he may not get you a full complement of at bats, but if he's in there and he can steal you a couple bases per week, it might get you through until you get some of these guys back.
I want to say, by the way, you brought him up, so I can call him out. Kevin Kiermaier could just suck my butt because he is awful. What is he, like 1 for 40 this year? He's so bad. And this is finally I'm like, oh, I got Kevin Kiermaier in a couple of leagues. I'm excited. And he's just terrible. And it's just making me really frustrated. And you said it's hard to find stolen bases. I have plenty of stolen bases on my teams, but no one hits home runs on my teams. I don't have any of these like idiots who are hitting home runs. I have like one from George Springer and that's it.
Kevin Kiermaier actually had a hit and a run scored today, and he raised his batting average from
by a million percent because
it was a beefy 0.53 to a 0.087. So
stud.
He's on fire. Yeah, right.
Well, that's about what Jose Ramirez is hitting these days. I think he's 1 for 23 to start the season.
He did hit that home run, like that, though. So. That was
at least
first
he has
hit.
A homer.
Yeah, and he also had he should have two home runs. He had another one robbed from him.
Yeah, he did. Yep.
Which is unfortunate. A couple other guys just to mention. I mean, pretty deep. You're looking at Jose Reyes. I don't think you mentioned him. So he's always a good bet to steal some bags. And then maybe Rajai Davis. That's really deep leagues, though, just because he's not getting hardly any playing time. So, but those are guys who you can look at in a deeper league. Greg Holland, though, has finally signed with the Cardinals a 1-year, $14 million contract. So, Ron, he should be joining the team shortly. I believe I read Monday he'll finally be up to snuff. I guess he's going through the minor leagues right now. But do you think that once he's on the team, like, do you have any reservations about him putting up numbers similar to what he did last year? Where would you rank him among closers?
I don't know. I'd probably put him kind of in that middle range, maybe a little bit on the tick of the higher side, maybe about top, I don't know, 11, 12, 13, maybe. I mean, you know, they signed the guy for that amount of money. They're obviously signing him for that job. And that tells me that they're not really all that confident with the guys that were there. You know, a lot of people were on Dominic Leone as a speculative ad. I had him in a couple places and he's kind of sucked so far. So I don't think that they're really confident with anybody they have there. And, you know, I don't really have any reservation at all with him. I mean, he's a guy that's done it. He's had the role, you know, he's a veteran. And I think it's a great signing for them. You know, that's one thing about the Cardinals is they make smart moves. They make smart signings, smart trades. They're pretty cautious with the guys that they bring up. And so I don't think, you know, once he gets inserted into the job, he's the closer. He's the guy. He's making $14 million a year. So I have no reservation putting him in there. I think it's a great signing for them. And I think if you were lucky enough to get him or draft him, you probably got a pretty good value on him in your draft as well. Because, you know, most people drafted you know, like when we did with the podcast league, you know, he hasn't signed with anybody yet. So I think it's a good signing for them. I think it's a good ad for anybody that was able to get him because you got him pretty cheap.
You know, the more I've kind of looked into his numbers, obviously there's a big split between the first and second half. Last year's first half, 33 and third innings, he had a 1.62 ERA. And in the second half, he had 24 innings and a 6.38 ERA. So the overall package was 3.61 ERA. 10.99 K per nine and 4.08 walks per nine. I wonder if it really was just fatigue in the second half because he was coming back from the surgery, or if maybe we really should be looking at the whole numbers as basically what he is. So I'm not necessarily set on him being a really good closer or a solid closer. So I think I'm probably going to hang on to like a Dominic Leone if I have the bench space, just because we also have injury history to worry about here with Holland. But Holland was clearly signed to be the closer, so there's a chance that he holds the job all year, and last year he had 41 saves. If he gets another 30-plus saves, is anyone going to be surprised? I doubt it. So he's definitely worth watching, and like Ron said, whatever you paid for him, you didn't pay anything to get him, so reap the benefits while you can. I just think that maybe there's a little bit of a chance he's not quite as good as anticipated, so I'd hold on to that secondary guy just in case.
Yeah, especially since like guys like Lyons and Leone, they'll be giving you really good ratios and strikeouts as well. So as far as closer handcuffs, those are still pretty good ones. But I would feel fairly confident with Holland remaining in that closer role for most of the season. I feel like he's going to have a pretty long leash after signing that contract. And I feel okay chalking up that second half last year to that fatigue, like you said, Van, after coming off of Tommy John. He just had such a massive workload in the first half. You can't hardly fault the guy for slowing down a little bit over the second half. And, you know, closer sample sizes, it's hard to take too much away from any of the numbers. But in that second half, just strand rate under 60%, 57.7%. So, you know, it's still, his numbers were still bad, like the strikeouts were down and everything, but could be a little fluky too.
Hey, well, real quick, let me throw in too, the thing with him with last year is we think about him pitching in Colorado and pitching at Coors and all that. You know, the thing about him is his numbers at home were actually a little bit better than they were on the road. So you can't really chalk it up to that either. The other thing, you know, with Dominic Leone, you know, we play in a couple leagues like this. If he's not in that closer role, it in Lions as well, it kind of makes those some intriguing holds guys if you're in a holds league as well.
Right. Did you have something else you're going to tack on there, Ben?
I was just going to make a joke about wooden shoes because Holland, but that's about it. So I'm good.
All right. A wooden shoes joke.
That may or may not be a first on this podcast. There's no way to tell.
I think it would it still fit in just completely out of context? Because you should tell it later.
I might. I will. I'll do it just randomly on a different player.
Perfect. So, yeah, and as far as the first second half splits, his hard contact rate actually improved in the second half. It went from 35.7% to 32.4% for whatever that's worth. So let's take a break here, shall we, boys? And then we'll come back and talk about some of our biggest takeaways from week one.
Nasty.
Welcome back to the Nasty Cast, episode 149 here. It has been one full week of baseball by the time that this episode will be hitting anybody's ear holes. So I am interested in getting your guys' biggest takeaway from the very first week. So, Van, we shall start with you. What is your biggest takeaway from the first week of baseball action?
Well, for me, my team, the Angels, played the Athletics in Oakland. So they were playing in that enormous Coliseum ballpark. And so my big takeaway is that the quote-unquote juiced ball is still very much in play. I saw 7 home runs go down in those, 3 or 4 games. And that's not an absurd number, but in Oakland it kind of is. And in fact, the home run that Matt Chapman hit off of Ohtani was a home run that likely 3-4 years ago did not leave the yard. It rather would have been a pretty good double that drove in a couple of runs, but wouldn't have been a 3-run shot. There were, I would say, 50% of the home runs hit that this weekend were legit. The other 50% were the kind of, you know, fly balls that really in the past would have either died down or just been doubles. So I'm fully in on the quote-unquote juiced ball being still around. I think the home runs are going to be just as much as they have been, if not more, and I think we're still going to continue to see players kind of shift towards that 3 true outcomes thing and just lift the ball, get that launch angle, and just try and hit home runs. And I think that's possibly going to cause some more problems for baseball as we go down the road. But we won't really know. I mean, hindsight's 2020, so we just have to wait until we can kind of look back and see what it did and what the impact was and how pitchers adjusted or how we as fantasy players adjusted. But it's definitely worth noting how far that ball flies now.
I took away how much a zero in a stat column at the beginning of the season makes fantasy owners panic. Straight panic mode for some of these guys that are slumping. And the thing about it is, if a guy's going on a slump, it'd be in the middle of the season, you might notice it that you haven't got any production from him for a few days or a week or whatever, but it's not going to be this big of a deal that where you have everybody wanting to trade everybody else or drop this guy or add this guy for Matt Davidson or whoever it may be. And you know, it's only a week, as we said. So you need to kind of stop hitting the panic button, and you need to just give these guys a chance to kind of do their thing, get in the swing of things. You know, one of the things you have to attribute some of these things too is, especially when you got East Coast teams, the weather needs to figure out what the hell it's doing. It's snowing one day, it's 60 degrees the next day, it's raining and sleeting, and it's just crazy. So the weather could be something to do with it with some of the East Coast guys. Last thing there, you know, there's a couple players too that are kind of breaking out I think are going to break out in a big way. Garrett Cole looked lights out. I think there's going to be more of that to come. Jose Berrios, I think, is going to have a great year. You know,
Burrito Suave.
Oh, he looked good.
And he did look good. And I think that's going to be something that you're going to see. And my boy, and I root for this guy, even though he's not a huge fantasy guy anymore. Never really was a big fantasy guy that I targeted in some leagues. But his longtime Ray, Evan Longoria, he looks absolutely awful. And I hope he figures it out and can have a little bit of success in San Francisco. But I watched that game the other night, and Clayton Kershaw made him look silly. So
he did finally hit a home run, though. So there's that.
He did. Yeah. So he's a little bit of an uptick. So like we said, you know, people panic with these zeros at the beginning of the season. But the last thing I'm going to leave this with is the Nationals need to figure out where they're going to bat Trey Turner and figure out their lineup.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I was going to bring up, too, is him batting sixth or seventh is really disconcerting. And we were talking about this earlier. We were texting about it since we took him in the first round in the Battle of the Podcast. And so we all have that investment together in him. And none of us like him hitting down in the order. And they've said that, you know, maybe it's a little bit of an experiment. But really, when you look at that lineup, it is so freaking loaded that if they don't value his speed at the top of that lineup, they're just not going to put him there. You know, you've got on-base hogs like Adam Eaton, who's just hitting the snot out of the ball. And, you know, Daniel Murphy isn't even back yet. When he's back, he's a candidate to hit number two or three or four. And that's just going to, you know, further push down Trey Turner. You would think that they'd put Rendon a little bit farther down because of his power. But at the same time, I can see the argument for hitting him a second since his on-base is so good and he doesn't strike out very much. So this might be something that doesn't go away. And I do think that he's still going to get plenty of opportunities to steal the bases that we expected from him. But the runs in RBI, especially the runs, definitely take a hit with this.
Well, and you know, we were talking about this on my other podcast, the Launch Angle Podcast, with Rob Silver and Jeff Zimmerman. I'd kind of brought this up as well. And I mean, really, if you consider trading Trey Turner, the whole reason you drafted him is because of the stolen bases. So you're going to have to trade him for stolen bases because largely that's what he's giving your team. And then from there, I mean, what kind of a trade can you figure up? I mean, maybe D. Gordon, but you can't do just a straight up D. Gordon trade. So I really think if you're a Trey Turner owner like we are in that league, and I personally am in several leagues because I managed to get the third overall pick in a couple leagues and I liked what we got in that league, so I just decided to do it again and again. So I think I'm just kind of stuck with him. Now, you're going to get your stolen bases, but like you said, the runs and RBIs are going to be a little less. I think the home runs will be fine. But I think Jeff Zimmerman brought up the point that for each spot you hit lower in the lineup for a full season, you're going to lose 18 plate appearances. So if he's going to lose, you know, nearly 100 plate appearances because he's batting sixth or seventh, that's a huge hit to his value. So yeah. On the one hand, at least though, with the Nationals, a lot of these guys are injury prone. I mean, that's not necessarily fun or nice to say, but Eaton does still have some bad knee issues. And though he's tearing the cover off the ball, he clearly can't run. Rendon has been hurt in the past, and who knows what to look out for. But there's not a whole lot you can do about it as a fantasy owner right now.
Yeah, that is a good point. That those guys are not bastions of health there between Eaton and Rendon, and obviously Daniel Murphy, who is already injured coming off of offseason surgery.
And real quick, too, before we move on from the Nats, a couple nuggets here. Number one, for what it's worth, Trey Turner hit fifth today against Atlanta. They got drubbed by Atlanta, by the way. Max Scherzer put up the rare stinker as far as his start. And then secondly, you mentioned Adam Eaton. What's the link between Adam Eaton being so successful right now and our podcast?
Whatever it is, I can't say it on air.
Okay, there you go. So I feel like we're fully responsible for the way he's playing right now. So everybody that drafted him, you're welcome.
That's very true, indeed.
Yes. Yes.
Very, very proper of him.
Also, and by the way, I don't think he steals more than two bases this year. I think he's not going to run.
It could very well be. All those injuries have definitely added up. And one other thing that I wanted to just tack on as far as one of my biggest takeaways, I was pretty heavily invested in Patrick Corbin this season, not only like on my teams, but I wrote about him not once but twice for Fantrax. And I'm probably going to include him on tomorrow's Fire and Ice when I'm writing that up. But Patrick Corbin, that slider usage is up where it was at the end of last year. Oh, baby.
You hear Nate gorgeous. Kissing his own ass as we go along here? Just
I was worried about that slider percentage holding, you know, because it's a freaking boatload of sliders. And he threw 49 of them as compared to 39 fastballs today.
Holy cow. That's like, yeah. Like Archer looks at that and goes, wow, that's kind of a little crazy.
Exactly. And that's you make fun of me for kissing my own ass, but I did write that he could be Archer Light.
I'm also mostly impressed that you can actually kiss your own ass. You're much more flexible than I thought.
Okay. So in your own mind, am I doing it turning frontwards or backwards?
I haven't gotten that far, and I don't plan on getting that far in my own mind.
I think you have legs over your head, like ankles behind your neck.
I have legs over my head and moons over my hemi, because I've been to Denny's recently. Let's move on to some players who are potentially giving us some cause for concern. Much has been made, first and foremost, about Kenley Jansen. So let's see, just because I wrote this down in this order, Van, we'll go to you first here. Are you worried about Kenley Jansen?
Well, what's funny is I wasn't initially. I mean, I thought it's a closer thing. It's just something that happens. I think he'll be okay. But I brought up the subject on the Launch Angle podcast this morning, and both Jeff and Rob were deadly serious that they were deathly serious. Excuse me. That
they died.
They died. They're both dead. I know. And this is how I'm announcing into the world.
They died on the podcast. I'm listening into that episode.
They were deathly serious that Jansen. I mean, like this could be it. Like he could be done. Like I mean, they were genuinely concerned, and it kind of took me aback because I was making some sarcastic remarks and so forth. But they were like, okay, you got to look at who's back there. The velocity's down. He hasn't struck anyone out, blah, blah, blah. So that immediately made me a little more concerned than I was originally going to be. So I guess I am pretty worried about it. It's a situation worth monitoring. I mean, Jansen was the guy. I'm not a guy who drafts closers particularly that early, so I didn't end up with him in any league. So I don't really have a whole lot at stake here. But if you're one of those guys who did, you do have a lot at stake here. So, I mean, it's a situation worth monitoring. And I think picking up Josh Fields is probably the smart move if you're out there and you're trying to get the handcuff if there ends up being a DL spot or if Jansen's genuinely hurt or something's very much wrong with him.
Yeah. The thing with it, too, is we can't, you know, just like a lot of these guys, you know, we can't panic just yet because we don't really know exactly what the deal is. You know, from Dave Roberts, you're hearing that the staff said, you know, the medical staff says he's 100% healthy. So who knows? It could be. But, if you know, I almost wonder if it's, you know, with a closer type mentality, if it ends up being like a mechanics thing or even maybe a mental thing, I almost kind of hope it is a health thing that they can correct, because sometimes, you know, some of those mental issues or some of the mechanical issues are things that are tougher to correct than maybe just some sort of nagging injury that they may have. So until we kind of get a definite on that, I don't think we really need to panic and say that he's done yet. But it is definitely concerning because, like you said, Van, if you spin up for him because he was ranked across the board as the top guy that does this job, it wasn't really close. I mean, Kimbrell's there as well, but he's, you know, he's definitely a tick back behind Kenley Jansen when we're drafting coming into 2018. So yeah, I'm with you there. You know, you have to look at Josh Fields. If you miss out on Josh Fields, Scott Alexander's another guy you can look at. He's kind of had a rough start. He's only pitched a couple innings. He's allowed a couple runs, but definitely see if those guys are available. You know, and holds leagues are probably, especially Fields is probably gone. You might be able to get Alexander, but those are the two guys you're going to look at. But you know, it's just kind of a wait and see mentality, because you're not going to go out and trade him, because if there's issues, you're not going to get value for him. So you're just kind of stuck there. You know, kind of like we talked about with Trey Turner a minute ago. So I'm kind of hoping it's something that almost is an injury rather than a mental thing or a mechanical thing.
I have a funny history with Josh Fields. Just because of the stupid 24-team score sheet league that I'm in with 80-man rosters. And so you have your bullpen and your starting pitchers. And so your bullpen, like mine, was like six pitchers or something like that. And the Dodgers kept sending him down to AAA last year. And if you look at my Twitter timeline, I'm constantly bitching about it because I'm like, this guy is awesome. Stop sending him down to AAA for the love of God. So I knew how good he was coming into this year, and I actually picked him up that, like, in some drafting holes. I actually took him just because, like, well, what if something should happen to Kenley Jansen? Then Josh Fields would be an awesome closer. And so there is that, and he is definitely leaping up to near number one closer handcuff status. But I want to ask you guys, if you guys are Kenley Jansen owners right now, would you trade him for, like, another top 10 closer? Like, Edwin Diaz is dealing right now. Ken Giles, Raisel Iglesias, those guys are 8, 9, 10 on the Fantrax.com ADP. Are you just looking to deal him right now?
I would if I could get a top 10 closer. Now, if I doubt you're going to get that just because this is intense news. I mean, this could be you get nothing out of him. So if someone out there is willing to give me Edwin Diaz for him, I'll do it in a heartbeat.
Yeah, same here. And, you know, the closer position, too, it changes so much. You might be able to get that next guy that could become the next top two or top three closer, like Kenley Jansen took the step a couple of years ago. So if you can get that, definitely, yeah, I would do that, and I would get rid of the headache. And if, you know what, if he ends up being great again, you know, everybody's happy and you got a good return on it. But it also, you know, it is a big gamble. But any trade's kind of a big gamble as well, too. You know, it could blow up in your face. But if you can get that value back right now with the question marks, I say you go out and do it in a second.
Yeah, go trade for another closer and then pick up Josh Fields. And you could get two closers that way. But anyway, let's move on to another guy, Yu Darvish, Ron. First start of the year did not go so smoothly. 4 1/3 innings, 5 earned, 4 Ks, and 2 walks. Are you worried about the Darvish after his first start?
I don't think so. And, I mean, it's one of those things, too, where you're going to have some nerves coming into a situation like that. I don't care who you are. You're going into a big market. You're going into a team that, you know, is coming off a World Series win a couple of seasons ago. You know, they have with the core that they have there, the guys that they brought up, they have those aspirations just about every year. They have a guy in the front office that knows how to construct a roster. And so I think there's just a lot of pressure going into that market. The other thing I was able to look at was I saw a couple of interviews with him, and for some reason it seems as though out of that whole arsenal of pitches that he has, he was only throwing two of them against the Marlins. He was only throwing his fastball and his slider against the Marlins. He wasn't throwing his curveball. He wasn't throwing his changeup. He wasn't throwing, you know, any of his three main secondary pitches. So I don't know if he was just working on some stuff. I don't know, maybe if they didn't feel like he was really had gotten the work in the spring that he needed. I don't really know exactly what that was, but he's hoping he's going to throw all five in there in his next start. I think his next start comes against Milwaukee, if I remember correctly. And so I think that was one thing, too. He might have just been kind of treating that as maybe an extended spring outing, possibly. Or I don't know if maybe that's just kind of a smoke screen to chalk it up to something and he just flat sucked that day. I don't really know. But, I mean, he's too good for me to be too worried about it. And he's a guy that I don't think I really have anywhere, to be honest with you. But I don't think owners should really panic after one start.
Well, and that was just it. I'm not concerned because the velocity was good. And the big point I had was what you touched on, Ron. For some weird reason, he supposedly wasn't using all of his pitches. So if he isn't going to be using all of his pitches, he's obviously going to get hit harder. So next start out, if he uses all of his pitches and he does what he does, then, hey, there we go. We're back to normal. There must be some weird reason why he did that. It's in the past, and no real point in even trying to figure out what it was, because I doubt he ever does it again. So, yeah, I think this is also maybe a good last-minute buy opportunity for him if you're in a redraft league. If the owner right now thinks, ugh, boy, he struggled pretty bad, maybe you can get him for a little bit cheaper than the price the owner paid for him. But yeah, I'm not concerned at all.
Well, and it also makes me wonder too, you know, going in against Miami, you know, we kind of all had this viewpoint of Miami just kind of being, you know, some Triple A teams might be able to beat them. And I don't know, maybe if they kind of took that in consideration, oh, we're just going to open against the Marlins. Let's just work on a few things here and there. But, you know, the Marlins are pretty scrappy in that series as far as kind of giving them a run for their money. And I don't think that it showed out the way it was supposed to show out with him, maybe just working on two pitches or just kind of trying to get up to speed. I think he only went 4 1/3 innings also. So he got hit around a little bit in those 4 1/3.
I wonder if the Cubs got the new pitching coach from the Rays, your Rays, Ron, Jim Hickey.
Yeah.
So I wonder if with Darvish there, if, you know, Hickey just told him to stop fooling around with 5 or 6 pitches, because we know that Darvish is one to do that. You know, just focus on these, you know, your fastballs, maybe a cutter, slider. And Hickey's done plenty of good work in Tampa in the past. So maybe if he is sort of altering the arsenal of Darvish, there will be some early growing pains. But I expect him to be fine. Like you guys said, the velo was fine. It was even up a little bit on his off-speed stuff. So if he has another bad start against the Brewers, and it is a tough matchup against the Brewers, then I might send out some low-ball offers, because I do think that he'll be fine in the long run.
You've been had a pretty good career doing what you're doing. How about you just stop throwing your pitches and instead just throw fastballs? That seems like the dumbest idea for a pitching coach to ever do. Now, I get it that, yeah, maybe if you lessen the Trevor Bauer thing. Like, Trevor Bauer doesn't need to be throwing 8
right,
pitches,
yeah.
But Darvish has been successful. Let him do what he does.
Oh, yeah, you're good at this and this and this. Yeah, don't do that anymore.
Maybe it got lost in translation. Like, he was talking to Darvish's translator, and he took, like, more as less. Like, he actually wanted him to, like, start throwing Ephus pitches 25% of the time.
Yeah.
And Darvish was like, what, less? Okay, I'll only throw 3 pitches. let's see. Tommy Pham is our next guy, Van. Started off really, really cold, but he's come around in a hurry, so his line looks just fine now. Any concerns about Tommy Pham?
No, and in fact, if you haven't read the whole thing that came out recently about his interview about how he felt he was treated by the Cardinals, go do it, because it is extremely refreshing to see, you know, an athlete, a baseball player in particular, come out and tell the truth, because we're so used to, even for example, the Jose Berrios interview after his perfect game was, I mean, he was coached. It was one of those just, I'm here for the team, and we're number one, and I just did what's best for the team. It was one of those things, whereas the whole Pham interview is full of curse words and talking about how the Cardinals were idiots because he's lighting up the world and they just won't call him up for whatever reason, and he thought it was BS, and he was literally ready to quit the team until one of his mentors told him, you know, give it a few weeks, finally gets called up, and he starts to rake, and the rest is history. So I think Tommy Pham's fine. He was not a target of mine just because I think he overperformed a bit based on what he did last year, but and particularly because of the cost this year, but I think he'll be fine. I mean, I have no concerns going forward about him, and it actually made me a bit of a major fan of his, at least as a human being, just because of that interview I read. So definitely go take a look at it if you haven't seen it.
Yeah, he definitely was cause for concern in spring training, you know, and it just kind of goes to show you that, you know, spring training, the stats most of the time don't translate over all that well into the regular season. But I think he's somebody that, and I was just kind of middle of the road on him. I wouldn't mind having him on a couple teams. I think I actually have him on one of my my keeper leagues. He was one of the guys I was able to keep on my offense. But other than that, I mean, it's just a guy that the way the draft shook out, I didn't really feel like I was getting that great of value on him, so I just didn't end up with him on any of my teams. But yeah, so far, so good. You know, like you said, Nate, he's really come around. You know, he's batting .348 early on right now, .444 OBP. And you know, we was kind of kid here, but you know, the Cardinals do it right with these outfielders, and you know, all these old mid-20s outfielders that they have, bordering on 30 years old. So he's a guy that if you got him, I think there's no reason to expect something similar to what you got last year. You know, the 25 steals, 23 homers, 73 RBIs. I mean, he kind of did it across the board, and in most leagues too. If you have leagues where you have left field, center field, right field, he's eligible usually in more than one spot, so that helps you out with him as well. But there's no reason to think that you can't get something close to next year, at least from what I've seen so far.
Yeah, he's already got two steals as well. So the vision issue does concern me a bit, and it was enough to scare me off of him for the most part in drafts since he wasn't exactly cheap. But as long as he can keep that in check and keep from striking out too much, I do agree that he will be fine. But Ron, we'll go back to you here. Luis Castillo had a little bit of a rough go around, which Van was sure to make us aware of in his first start. So are you concerned about Luis Castillo?
I'm not, and he's one of these guys too that, you know, and I think Nate, you and I are in the same are in the same boat with this the Luis Castillo, and the matter of, you know, the thing is, if the boat goes down, I think we're just going to go down with it because it's one start. I'm not really too concerned about it just yet. Maybe he did pitch above his head a little bit last year, but I don't really have any reason to think that he can't get somewhat close to that. The minor league numbers were solid. The track record's solid all the way up. And so, once again, first start, no need to panic. But the thing about it is it was a pretty bad first start. You know, he didn't really leave any guys on base. You know, I think he had a 40% hard contact rate. He did strike out a few guys, but he also allowed, I think, five runs in a start. So needless to say, I don't think there's anything that really changes for me. I don't, you know, even Clayton Kershaw has a bad day every once in a while, and I'm not obviously comparing him to Clayton Kershaw, but there's just going to be days as a pitcher you're not going to have it. And so I'm hoping that's what this is. And, you know, you got to give guys a little bit of a leash too, you know, because the thing about it is he only made 15 starts last year. And so that's the only 15 starts he's made in the majors as well. So he's not got a lot of a track record as far as being a major league pitcher. And so he's going to have some starts that suck. And so that's just part of it. But I'm not worried a bit. And Van, you do need to trade him to me in that league.
Well, yeah, it's just one start, so no, I'm not concerned.
I mean, what I meant to say is he sucks, and you should trade him to me.
I don't know what league it would be because I don't think I own him in a league that you're in, other than the league that we're all three on the same team in. So,
oh, I thought you got him in the podcast, the listener league.
Maybe I did, but I don't remember.
Remember you did because you were trying to start the bidding war with Nate, yeah. And you got, yeah. So feel free to trade him to me.
Yeah, I'd be fine trading him to you, but as long as I get what I want. But because simply I think he's more of a number three starter than a number 1A like you guys. That's the only difference. I think the ceiling's significantly lower than you guys, but this is one start. I don't think he's this bad, so he's going to be plenty better than this for the rest of the season for sure.
So I was trying to make heads or tails out of this first start, and maybe I'll write about this too tomorrow. But the sinker is something that he started using more and more last year in the second half. First of all, I guess I'll start with the good. Like, the changeup was there. 19 whiffs off of the changeup is freaking ridiculous in his first start. Something was wrong with the sinker. He threw 32 of them. Not only did he not register a single ground ball off of it, but it absolutely got tattooed for a 750 average and 1,000 ISO. So last year, it had a 77% ground ball rate, that sinker. So something was off with that. It's a pitch he used over 20% of the time last August and September. So if that has, for some reason, just left him, he could be a pretty big disappointment this season. But that said, it was just one start. Hard to imagine that pitch is just gone. So I think it was just an off day for that pitch. And I'm not ready to jump ship by any means. And obviously that changeup is still there. Strikeouts will be there. So I'm not really very concerned.
Well, and you said that the sinker was the new pitch that he'd added since he was in the minors, right?
Right.
Right. Well, so we've also got an adjustment period that's going to happen in the majors, because all the data that all these teams have had on him from when he was in the minors is that he doesn't have a sinker. So maybe last year the added success he had was just because people weren't expecting it. So maybe there's going to be an adjustment period, and that's the beauty of baseball, is the back and forth. So I firmly don't believe that, you know, the pitch is that bad that it just gets tattooed all the time. So this is just merely a bad start. That's all it is.
Yeah, that could be, you know, sequencing too, and maybe his location was off. So with one start, yeah, it's hard to make too much out of it. But Van, we'll go to John Lester here. We just went from Castillo, who is very young, to John Lester, who is a KG veteran at 34 years old. He lasted just a 3 1/3 innings against the Marlins, gave up 3 earned runs on 3 walks and 2 Ks. You a little more concerned about Lester than Castillo?
Mo money, mo problems, mo Lester, and that's what happens. No, still not worried. My preseason prediction was like a 3.5 to 3.75 ERA, 180 innings, maybe 175 strikeouts, and that's still what it's going to be. The velocity was a little off that day. but he's an older pitcher, and he's just going to have to deal with starts like this again. So I don't think it was atrocious, by the way, because I saw some of that start, and there were some bloops here and there, and he didn't necessarily get rocked entirely, though he did give up some, you know, hard hit balls. So I'm, again, not too concerned. It's a one-start thing. I think if I'm looking at these two pitchers, if we have three starts, both these guys go three starts where they're hit hard, I'm going to be a little more concerned about Lester just because of his age, even though he's got that crafty veteran presence or whatever. But for the most part, no.
There's nothing crafty about his pickoff move.
No, not at all. Which, by the way, I was playing MLB The Show the other day, and he picked me off second base, and I was livid because I'm like, come on, that is not realistic. That guy couldn't roll the ball to second base if he wanted to.
Is that what he did to pick you off, is roll it?
He should have, but he didn't. No, it was like a bullet right on the line. And like
Yeah, Ben was actually just pressing the showboat button the whole time. He was doing like backflips in second base. Paying attention at all to the slowly rolling baseball over to the
He was waving to the ladies in the bleachers at Wrigley. Yeah. So,
Just threw it, like Lester threw it in the glove. He's done that before too, hasn't he? Where he just kind of flings the glove with the ball in it to the first baseman. I think he's done that before.
It's probably a better strategy. Him throwing it. But yeah, the thing, you know, the thing is too, when you draft these guys that are 34, 35, 36, getting up there, you know, you got to take into context of what you could possibly be getting. You could be getting some good production later, or you could be getting, you know, the guy in the season where that drop off finally really significantly happens and he falls off the cliff. And so we know with John Lester, we know he's durable. We know what you get with him, but he's also, as I'm looking at his stats here, he's pitched 180 innings in every season since 2008, which with the majority of those being over 200 innings. And so, you know, there's a lot of mileage there. You know, there's not much tread left on the tires, but you know, the guys, you know, you said the phrase crafty veteran, that's definitely him. And so once again, first start, not too worried yet, but if it becomes a trend where he's only pitching 3 1/3 innings, he's walking 4 guys, he's allowing these runs, then obviously it's cause for concern. But the thing is, too, he can afford to be a little bit off because they should have a pretty good offense behind him. And if he can do just enough, you know, the bullpen will probably be decent in behind him as well. So I think you have to, when you're drafting, you kind of take and, you know, you have to draft him. You're not drafting 2008, 2009 John Lester. You're drafting the 34-year-old 2018 John Lester, which still – for where you get him could provide some decent production, but just understand that the possibility of that drop off could be there.
Yeah, if you're expecting more than a SP3, then you're probably going to be disappointed. You know, and maybe this is the first year that he doesn't eclipse, you know, 180 innings if he just isn't as sharp as he used to be and he piles up his pitch count a little more early than he has in the past. You know, maybe there's that, but I don't necessarily see some sort of complete implosion from Lester. So let's go on to our very last player in the cause for concern category. Ron Billy Hamilton hitting at the bottom of the Reds lineup. Obviously not good for his value. What do you think about Billy Hamilton now versus where he was going in drafts merely a few weeks ago?
Well, the thing about Billy Hamilton is we know that he can't get on base anyway. So I don't know that this is a really big difference from what we expected from him before. And I was curious to just kind of see, you know, what his 2017 looked like. And he, you know, the main thing about him is, yeah, overall, the average wasn't great. The OBP wasn't great, but he only hit .219 versus lefties last year anyway. So he could, you know, when you're drafting him this year, you could potentially find him in a platoon type situation anyway. And so he's not a guy that I really targeted anyway. And I mean, you know, once again, we talk about how, you know, we're not on certain guys and there's certain guys you don't want to add to your team, but there's very few guys that when you're looking at them and the value gets to a certain point, you got to pull the trigger and do that. I don't feel like I was in a draft where I was getting good value on Billy Hamilton because he is kind of a one trick pony. You know, and especially in the only place I really feel comfortable doing that is maybe a 4 or 5 outfield league where I think I've had success in the past where I can design a five guy outfield where you have one of these guys that is maybe a steal guy. You can compensate for what he doesn't do with your other four. But even for Billy Hamilton, I mean, the start he's off to this season is just ridiculous as far as he's striking out almost 40% of the time. He's batting .083. The OBP is .154. He has no steals. he's not doing anything right. And so I don't know, you know, I don't think he's going to be a full-time starter at this point unless he can figure it out. But I mean, he played 139 games last year. The OBP was only 299. Season before that, he played 119 games, 321. 2015, he played 114 games. The OBP is 274. So it's pretty simple. You know, you don't need to be a big baseball person to understand. If you're not on base, you can't steal a base. You can't steal first when you're at home plate. And so if you could do that, he might be solid. But I don't think that's a rule that they're going to institute. So it doesn't really affect me because I don't have him anywhere. He's not a guy that I targeted. But I don't really know, you know, why this is such a big surprise for people that did draft him.
Well, yeah, and I'm concerned for Billy Hamilton because I've always been concerned for Billy Hamilton. I don't like players who can't walk if they also can't hit for average. I mean, it doesn't make sense at all. If you can't do one or the other, then why are you a baseball player? That's just the most important thing. Now, he does play defense, so we get that. But now he actually has some competition on the roster. The Reds have arguably four other outfielders on the team that are better or at least is potentially as good in certain ways. I think Adam Duvall and Jesse Winker are both definitely better than Hamilton. Scott Schebler has played better and probably just playing is better. And then Phil Orvin is a cheaper player that's arguably better. So when Hamilton does play, he's going to bat ninth because that's where he should because he's just bad with the stick. And though it sucks for fantasy owners, it's a smart move baseball-wise. And guess what? The Reds don't care what we as fantasy players think. They're going to do what they think is going to let them win games. And though Hamilton's defense is above and beyond virtually anyone else in the outfield, it's just not worth, you know, taking such a hit offensively to go ahead and keep putting them out there day in and day out. So I just don't see a whole lot of success coming in from this year. And I'm really shocked they didn't trade him. And it wouldn't surprise me if they do trade him by, you know, midseason or close to the trade deadline.
I guess I'm a little more optimistic than that. I think his defense is good enough to where that will keep him in the lineup more often than not. But, you know, he is going to remain buried at 8 or 9 in that lineup. And, you know, obviously that destroys your runs and RBI. You're not going to get those 85 runs from last year. You're looking, you know, maybe more like 2015, 2016 kind of numbers. 56 runs in 2015, 69 in 2016 was very nice. But yeah, it's not looking good overall. I doubt that he hits 60 steals this year. I would be more worried if I thought more highly of guys like Schebler and Duvall, who are sort of one trick like power ponies. I just think that Hamilton's defense is too good to get him out of the lineup every single day. You know, you're just looking at steals. Like you said, he's a fourth or fifth outfield option. That's about as high as I'm going with it because you're just taking such a hit in homers, RBIs, runs, even batting average on bases. You're not getting anything from him there. It's just a total one trick pony. So I would, probably if I don't own him, maybe he's one of those second half targets. Like if I'm okay offensively everywhere else and I just need a whole buttload of steals and he's still playing every day, then maybe I trade for him there. I wouldn't hesitate to deal him if I did draft him, if I was a Hamilton guy, because I just don't think the season's going to be too great. You know, maybe it's like 2015.
Well, let's take a look at this too, by the way. Like you were mentioning, you know, Duvall, they're like a one trick pony or so forth. Billy Hamilton, per Fantrax metrics, per the offensive metric, he last year put up a negative 18.1, and per defensive, he put up a positive 9.6 for a 1.2 WAR. Adam Duvall had a negative 1.1 defense or offense, and or I'm sorry, that's his year, negative 1.8 offense and negative 1.4 defense, and still had a 1.8 WAR. So he had greater WAR than the Billy Hamilton, even though Hamilton provides, again, the best center field defense of anyone. So if you have just a hitter who does something decent, you've already got something that's better than what Hamilton is. And Duvall hit .249, .301, .480, which really was not that good. So that just goes to show how poor Hamilton truly is on offense.
Indeed. All right, let's take another quick break here and then come back with some waiver wire guys. I really don't mind what happens now and then, as long as you'll be my friend at the end. If I believe Nasty. Will you still call me Superman? If I'm alive and Nasty. Will you be there holding my hand? I'll keep you by my side. All right, back here on the last segment of the Nasty Cast, we're going to look at some guys that we are potentially getting off of the waiver wire. Number one, Jose Martinez. Obviously, he's the best player in baseball. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, he's been on fire, but there's no need to talk about him. Obviously, he's very legit, right? Like, obviously, not. I have been very, very in on him. Do you guys have anything negative to say about Jose Martinez as to why you would not pick him up in any format?
I mean, he should be owned in every format. That's all that I'd really want to say in it.
Okay. Then we shall move on from his awesomeness. Go on to Tyler Molyvan. He had a 6 shutout innings in his debut, only 1 hit, 2 walks, and 7 Ks. Is this good enough to have you picking him up?
Yeah, and in fact, I had picked him up prior to that when the Reds said that they were going to get him a start here and there, just because I think there's some potential to be had here. I really do kind of like him. I think he could be a really solid spot starter, and though he's certainly no ace, he could potentially provide some really nice stats for your team. The ERA, I mean, over the last, well, since all of 2017 and all the levels we pitched, AA, AAA, and the Major League team, the highest he had was a 2.73, and FIP and XFIP largely agreed with him, though they didn't like quite as much the 20 innings he threw in the Major Leagues. But strikeouts were also down, and his walks per 9 were way up in the majors. In the minors, he generally walks around 2 per 9 or a little less than that. So if he can continue walking, you know, that few of batters, and maybe the strikeouts tick up a bit, you could have a decent player on your hands here. And I think that's exactly what he's going to be. For a waiver wire ad, you could definitely do worse. And I'm kind of glad I picked him up in a handful of leagues I got him in.
Yeah, I got one league in particular that I'm definitely going to target him in, that he's still left out there. But he's obviously doing something right, because, you know, like Van said, the ERA all through his minor league levels and into last year is pretty solid when you look at it up and down. Now, the one thing is, to, you know, Van, you kind of alluded to this as well, he's not a huge strikeout guy. When you tally up his career numbers between the minors and the majors last year, he's only at about a 7.27 K per 9. I'd like to see that tick up a little bit. I'd like to see the walks come down a little bit. And if he can kind of even that out, you know, the K per 9 last year in the majors were only 6.3. So if he can get that up a little bit, I think that you are going to do real well for yourself. But if he can keep the walks down, keep the whip and ERA down, I think that you can kind of tolerate the lack of strikeouts for a guy that you're getting just essentially off of waivers.
I don't know if like a 10-12 team league, I don't think I'm interested. 15 team league, this is like the perfect pickup, where he's not going to get you a ton of strikeouts. You know, he struck out 7, but he didn't actually get a ton of whiffs in that start. I wouldn't necessarily expect those strikeouts to continue like anywhere near a K per inning. Could have very well been the matchup against the strikeout heavy Cubs. But I do think that he could be a SP4 or 5 pretty much all season. Definitely gives you a very good whip. I think that control is very, very good. And plus, I mean, he was a deep league dude for me in pitchers, so I was predisposed to like him coming in. This is a very encouraging start from Molly. So, yeah, 15-team leagues and deeper, definitely interested in him. Matt Davidson, the next guy, had a triple dong day on, I believe that was opening day, Ron. So what sort of interest do you have in Matt Davidson? Where are you picking him up at?
I'm not. To be honest with you, because I don't know what you're really getting with Matt Davidson. I mean, he did have 26 homers last year.
More power.
Well, he's
whatever.
He's,
it is.
But he had 220 last year. He had a 260 OBP. He played 118 games. So, I mean, he did give you some pop. You know, we always harp on the K rate, you know, every week. And his K rate last year is a whopping 37%. He didn't walk much last year, so that, you know, that put the OBP in the tank. So I look at this year's stats. You know, we were kind of talking earlier on about Stanton and what he did, you know, with the homers and the strikeouts. When you look at Davidson's numbers across the board, he has 5 hits, 4 of them are homers, because he did have another one today, but he's still not a guy that I'm really looking to do anything with. And I alluded to, you know, things that were kind of sticking out for us that first week, the amount of people on social media that are panicking to trade for or add Matt Davidson. And should I drop this guy for Matt Davidson? I don't drop anybody that's, you know, was a big part of your plan going into the season to get Matt Davidson, because yeah, he might get you 30 homers, but is it worth getting the OBP under 300? Is it worth all the strikeouts? I don't really think so. So he's not a guy that I'm really looking to add actively anywhere, because I'm comfortable with just about every league I have across the board, the guy I have at third base ahead of Matt Davidson. And I really didn't have anybody at this point that is, you know, it's week one, so I'm not really ready to cut ties with a lot of players yet anyway. And he was scooped up pretty quickly, so that's fine. Those people can have him. Just not a guy that I'm looking to get in any format.
Yeah, and I guess if I want to play devil's advocate, I'd say that for the most part in his career, his walk rate was significantly higher than it was last year. Last year's 4.3% was, well, basically half of his next worst walk percentage season. So he usually walked around 9.8, 10% of the time. He's walking 11.1% of the time. So if he's regained the ability to walk a little more, that's certainly going to help his overall numbers. Right now he's at 250, 333, and then 813 slugging percentage. That's not going to last. But if the strikeouts stay down below 30%, the walk rate stays up, you're going to get some value. I'm just not confident that it does. He's only 27, so there is still the chance that, you know, this is a post-hype breakout for the guy. I just don't necessarily know if I'm going to be the one who has him on my team for it. I think a lot of people that have already gone nuts and picked him up, they're going to be the people who have done it. If he's still out there in your league, I'm ignoring him for the most part.
I might pick him up just in case something has happened, but overall, not super interested. You mentioned the walk rate, Van. I'm not necessarily convinced that it rebounds in a big way. Looking at his plate discipline metrics from last year, 48% swing rate, not super passive. 33% O swing, not super selective. So maybe it does tick up to like league average or something like that as he, you know, gets more acclimated with the major league pitching, how to lay off breaking balls and so on and so forth. And, you know, if I'm rostering him, I guess I should say if he's had some sort of epiphany, you know, just in case he's going to make a little bit more contact this year. But yeah, otherwise, you're looking at like Joey Gallo without the walk rate in a worse lineup, and that's just not really good to anybody in any format. So in a deeper league, yeah, I'm taking a stab at him, but he's definitely gone in all of my leagues already. Ronaldo Lopez, Van, another guy here on the same team, actually. Six innings pitched, only two hits, one earned, two walks, and six strikeouts in his first start. What sort of interest do you have in Ronaldo Lopez?
You know, I'm kind of cautiously optimistic is what I'd say. He was a top-level-ish prospect with the Nationals. Him and Lucas Giolito were their big pitchers on their team a few years ago. And his stock kind of fell just because the ERA and everything never really caught up to the stuff. The walk rate was always a little too high. Last year, suddenly he just quit striking batters out. I think he struck out like 5.6 K per nine in 50 innings or so when he actually pitched in the major leagues. That said, in the minor leagues, he was still over 9 in 120 innings that season. So there's still potential for some strikeouts. I just don't know if he's going to be the guy who just suddenly pitches as a major leaguer. I think he grows into the role of being a decent pitcher. So again, I'm cautiously optimistic. He threw 168.2 innings last year, and he has a chance to be a solid rotation member this year. But the days of him being a top ace are gone, I think, overall. I think the best we can see for his career is maybe a number three starter, but I'm not going to count on that. Maybe number four. But if you could play the matchups with him this year, if he's on your team, then absolutely I would take him. If he's maybe away from the White Sox and playing against a bad team in a big park, then sure, I'm going to stick him out there. If he's at home against, say, the Twins, I'm probably not going to start him just because it's a good lineup in a park that's bad for pitchers, particularly fly ball pitchers. So he has raised his ground ball percentage a little bit, and if that's the case, he's just not getting the ball in the air quite as much as he used to, then that's going to be a big improvement for him. But I still think he's going to be kind of homer prone, so definitely worth watching there. But like I said, overall, cautiously optimistic.
He's only 24. They're going to give him a chance to see what he is. You know, the Sox, we've talked, they're one of the first farm systems that we previewed on the Fantrax Dynasty podcast, and we talked about him a little bit. And they're going to give these guys a chance to start and kind of get their feet wet and see what they can do, because they have to figure out if, you know, what they have and where they're going to fit each piece and all of that. And so I think – and he's another case of that, and he happens to be one of the first ones to kind of get the chance. And I actually had him the other night in DFS, and I remember that was a pretty sketchy night as far as starters. There wasn't really any big guys going, so he was. That was the only thing I did positive in my lineup that night, was put him in there. Other than that, I look across the board at what he did. The thing I have a little bit of caution with is when I look at his FIP from the other night combined with the walks that he gave up, the homers, I'm a little bit – sketchy in that regard, because I, you know, the FIP over four in that start, it makes me wonder, you know, just how much he's able to locate and the command with everything. And so, you know, the pitch is grayed out solid. You know, he's got a 70 grade fastball. The curveball is a nice secondary one, but I just don't know if he's got enough pitches to be a frontline guy. I think Van kind of hit it on the head there. You know, he's one of these guys that we talk about that I think he's going to be a middle of the rotation starter. But there still is a little bit of – I'm a little bit more optimistic. There is a little bit more of a glimmer of hope that he could become maybe your number two. I don't know if there's any front of the rotation ace potential here still. But like I said, he is only 24, so there's still a little bit of time to see what they have here. So overall, I'd take him definitely as one of my starters down the line there. And I think, you know, another good point that you threw out there is playing the matchups with him, I think, is huge. Like DFS, if you can play him on a FanDuel or on a DraftKings, I think that's kind of where he's best suited.
I'm really interested in Lopez. His velocity is up 2 miles an hour. His fastball is actually hitting 99 in the first inning of that start. And speaking to his repertoire, so he's still got that fastball, changeup, and then he's was working in a slider or cutter that we didn't see much last year in this first start. I'm not entirely sure if it's just one pitch that fluctuated in velocity or two pitches altogether. Brooks has it as two pitches at 86 and 82, and then Fangraphs just grouped them together as a slider. So maybe it's just a little bit of a slider that he just sort of manipulates. I'm not really sure, but he threw 22 of them combined, and he got four whiffs, so 18% whiff rate combined, so not too bad there. But that at the very least, I think, piques my attention after, you know, like you said, Van, I think you cited his K per nine last year at 5.66 over, and that was in like almost 50 innings. So, pretty decent sample size there, a lot more than one start, but I'm very encouraged by what I saw. So I'm definitely adding him anywhere I can. Jake Junis, Ron, another guy who had a really good start, 7 shutout innings, 3 hits, 1 walk, 6 Ks. Are you more interested in Jake Junis?
Yeah. The only thing I don't like about him is I don't necessarily like the lineup, and there's some things about it that I don't like, but I do think that he had a nice start the other night. And I think if he's out there, you know, kind of like we talked about with Tyler Molly, I think he's a guy that you could add, but I think he's shown a little bit more that he can be a little bit more complete pitcher than what Tyler Molly can get you. And I think also too, he kind of profiles, you know, like you said earlier, Nate, you know, in the deeper leagues, he's a perfect pickup that you're looking for right now. A guy that's kind of shown out a little bit. You know, one of the things too is it led me to look at, you know, the team batting average, because he did this against the Tigers, and you know, I was kind of looking through those stats, and so the Tigers are hitting they're hitting .225 on the season, so that's something else too you got to take consideration as far as that. But at the same time as well, you know, the division that he plays in, you got a young Sox team that they're hitting well now. They could go through some slumps, so he might be able to, you know, if he plays the Tigers a few times, he might be able to go against some teams that he might be able to have some success against. Now, I don't think that when I look at this batting average, team batting average list, is I don't think the Indians are going to hit .167 all year with the lineup they have. So needless to say, that could be a tough matchup for him. But overall, I think at this point, when you're looking for somebody to be a injury replacement, I think he's a perfect candidate for that.
I think that's fine. Threw 170 innings last year. It means he has the potential to get you some decent innings this year. Plays in a decent park on a bad team. Doesn't strike a whole lot of guys out. But as a spot starter, fill in for injury, he'll do just fine in a pinch. You kind of compared him to Tyler Mahle. Doesn't quite have the fastball. I think his fastball is a little less. So I think I would rely a little more on Mahle, also because Molly's a little bit younger. So there's potential for growth there, even though they're both under 25 years old. So still guys that Junis, I wouldn't mind having on my team in the same capacity of put him on the bench, spot start him when you need to. If you get an injury, then maybe you need to lean on him a little bit more and you'll be okay. But I think there's still some potential in here to get some good decent innings. Oh, last thing too, real quick. I forgot. Ned Yost last year referred to I can't remember what he called it, but basically referred to him as a dead fish. Like his composure as a dead fish.
Junis?
Yeah. Somebody look this up, because it's look it up. Ned Yost referred to whatever his oof as a dead fish.
Wow. That reminds me of I just think of Kyle Hendricks on the mound. He's kind of like a dead fish.
Yeah, that fish has been dead for a while.
Yeah, considerably less interested in Junis compared to Mahle. Still just two pitches from him, just fastball slider guy. And yeah, the fastball velocity is actually down to 89 miles an hour from 91 last year. So I'm definitely just looking to maybe spot start him in a very favorable matchup. Otherwise, I don't care too much about me some Junis. Ben, Miguel Andujar, the last guy that we have here on the waiver wire. Been some injuries in that Yankees lineup, and Miguel Andujar ended up getting the call after all a little bit sooner than we were expected. So what kind of leagues are you picking him up in?
Yeah, and I mean, you pick him up based on your team. If you've got some of those Yankees on your team and they're hurt, then sure, Andujar is a real easy pickup to do that. I've never really been that excited for him, but as a corner infielder fill-in piece, I think you could do much, much worse. Anyone in that lineup, basically, is going to score runs and drive them in. And he's been able to hit for average and some okay power the last several years in the minors. So pick him up if you're desperate or if you just need a corner infielder piece to throw in every now and then. I'm not going to rely on him as my main third baseman by any means. But if you have the hole and you need to fill it, Miguel Andujar should be just amply able to do so.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. I think, you know, if you're plugging him in for an injury, I think he's a decent pickup. But looking down through his numbers, he's not a big stolen base guy. He's not a huge power guy. You know, he doesn't strike out a lot, but he doesn't walk at an overly high rate. And so there's not a lot of categories that he's going to give you a lot in. But what I will say is one of the things I like about this Yankee lineup, if they can get back to health or if, you know, it works out that he can win a spot or kind of stick, you know, the you know, Gary Sanchez, you know, Judge stand in the lineup. I look at the rest of those guys in that lineup that are hitting around them, and I kind of look at them as, you know, I equate it to, you know, you have like the shark in the ocean and all the little fish kind of go around him, you know, to get some of the scraps that come off or whatever it is, to try to, you know, clean that stuff up. I kind of look at that lineup as that same kind of concept. You know, you have those the big boppers in there that are going to kind of maybe get pitched around a little bit, and that's going to force the guys like Didi Gregorius, who had a all-world career day the other day, the Brandon Drury's of the world, the Neil Walker's of the world, the Miguel Andujar's of the world. I think it's going to only add to their value. And so if they can find a niche in that lineup, you know, and carve out a role and get some at-bats, I think it's going to allow them, you know, we talk about, you know, Mike Stanton striking out a lot, but the other thing is, you know, he's hitting a lot of homers too. So
Mike,
you know,
Stanton,
he's this guy that he plays baseball. And that's all I know about him. But yeah, he used to. I think I have his rookie card somewhere. Mike Stanton.
It does say Mike on the rookie card. I can't attest to that.
To be fair, well, I knew that was going to happen at some point. So at least I haven't called Eric Thames Marcus yet. So
I'm
waiting for that to happen. But yeah, we haven't talked really about him yet, so I'm sure it'll happen anyway. But at the end of the day, he's all right. But he's not a guy that I would be counting on for big production in my lineup overall.
I unfortunately, as a Jake Lamb owner in two leagues, had to go pick up Miguel Andujar, and his playing time has been sparse, to say the least. So I am still looking for third baseman replacements, and these are very deep leagues, so I'm kind of just screwed.
You drafted Jake Lamb in a couple of leagues? Why?
Well, it was very, very early in, like, December, as one of those 50-round draft and holds. So it's just kind of weird, you know? And the
plus,
other one,
Lambs are adorable, too. I mean...
Right, yeah. And then I'm also trying to replace Justin Turner in the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational. So I believe I put in a bid for Andujar there as well. So I'm hoping that he can weasel his way into some playing time. Even with all these injuries, it's crazy how little there is for him with the likes of Neil Walker and Brandon Drury on board now. Even stupid Tyler Wade, who I liked last year. But now he's a roadblock, so I hate you, Tyler Wade. Go back to AAA. This is all about me. So I do think that he is worth a look in deeper leagues for sure. He does have some nice offensive potential, but man, that playing time might be too sparse for shallow leagues. So I'm going to monitor his playing time very closely. So obviously I did pick him up in some deep leagues. So I would recommend that at least as a, injury replacement, just in case. But I think I've kind of backed off of that, like, just in case he's awesome type of pickup. I don't know if you guys do that during the course of the season. Like, I'm kind of agnostic on this player, but just in case, like, I have this roster spot at the back end of my roster I'm not really doing anything with. So I'll pick up this guy just in case he turns into something and I can trade him for something I actually want.
Oh, yeah. Just depends on the roster. If I have the spot, I'll definitely do that sort of thing.
Yeah, so I would at least give him a spec look in deeper leagues. But that's going to do it, boys. Another week in the books. Maybe next week we'll go back to getting a guest on here. I forgot to mention that to you guys before we started recording. So after the show, we shall discuss that. But before we get out of here, let's get into our plugs. Van, what do you got coming out this week?
Let's see. This morning, my article was released on Fantrax HQ about prospects in the early going and how they're doing, and basically like Shohei Ohtani, what he did, Lewis Brinson, a couple of guys like that. So that's worth taking a look at. For our listener league listeners, I just wanted to have a little bit of an announcement. I'm going to be doing, and I just kind of started tonight, a bit of a review, and this is of our Patreon supporters, that's what it is, who play in the listener league, of your teams, and I'll do a video and just explaining how, based on a algorithm or whatever program I put it into, Fantasy Pros, I think, what it says about your team, what you need to do and improve, and maybe go through and talk about each of your teams in that regard. So that's coming up. Of course, I also do the Fantrax Dynasty Baseball Podcast, which we'll do next. And I released the Launch Angle Podcast with Rob Silver and Jeff Zimmerman, like I mentioned earlier, and we did that today. So keep a lookout for all these thousands of podcasts I'm on and the various things that come out throughout the week.
That is a whole heck of a lot of podcasts.
It feels like it, like 9 of them, but it's only 3, but I love them all.
And the other thing is there is no such thing as too much Manly Van Lee.
Indeed. Well, so, I like to think so anyway.
Right. So I got, as Van said, we're going to be recording the Fantrax Dynasty later on. So that'll be coming out. I'll be on Fantastics Thursday night. So Friday morning, you can check out what happened. It's kind of the review of the bigger events Thursday night. Some of the bigger performers on both hitting and pitching. I think I have American League that night. So we'll profile that. Been doing, I think it just came out right before we went on air. Bob Lung and I looked at, from a football standpoint, we looked at some, we previewed quarterbacks going into 2018 as far as how they relate to consistency. And we looked at some of the stats from last year, relayed that to this year, looked at some of the free agent moves and how that affects the quarterbacks in the league. So you can check that out at Big Guy Fantasy Sports as well. Catch me on Twitter at The Real Made. If you have a video or a picture of a zombie raccoon, please tweet that to me as quickly as you possibly can.
All right, Van, we've waited until the very end. Give us the shoe story.
I didn't really have one. I was just going to make a really bad shoe joke about Greg Holland. You know, something along the lines of the reason he had such a bad second half is because he pitched with those wooden shoes and it just wore him out too much.
Aha. Uh-huh. I thought it was maybe because he slept in a Dutch oven.
You could either take that as a fart joke or a cooking joke. So that can go one of two ways. Be my guest, listener. It's like a
double
entendre
joke.
Yeah, exactly.
choose your own Dutch oven adventure. Either way, you lose. Oh, Lord. All right, so I've got my first Fire and Ice article coming out of the season on Fantrax later on this week. Should hit your eyeballs on Friday. And, yeah, that's about it. I've got the, obviously, the other podcast that we're doing. And then Resball, I don't know exactly what the hell I'm doing there yet, but I'll be doing something sooner or later. So there is that. So until next week, ladies and gentlemen, may the fantasy gods shine upon you.